Okay.
Shalom Aleichem. We'll keep Marita in mind today, of course, who is a regular, as we know, but doing a little procedure today, so we should have her in mind. The learning should be a zechut for her refuah, and for refuah for all those who continue to recover in Israel from the terrible attacks of this past week. I was speaking in shul a little bit about how important it is to be mindful of the fact that, you know, in the parsha that we read yesterday, Yehuda is the arev for Binyamin. Ki avdecha ravid anar meim avi lemor. And we have to have a sense of having arvus for Binyamin. Remember, both of these attacks took place in what's called Ezor Binyamin. Ofra, Givat Asaf, Beit El. It's all called Ezor Binyamin because way back when in Sefer Yehoshua, when Eretz Yisrael was Nitchalka Lishvatim, when it was divided according to the tribes, so that area of the land of Israel was actually given to Shevet Binyamin. So just like sometimes the Torah has a way of speaking very directly to us, just as Yehuda was the Arev for his brother Binyamin, as Aleinu le'arev et Achenu v'et Achiotenu be'eretz be'ezor Binyamin, who need our support this week. It's very important. So we'll have all of the Ptsu'im in mind as we continue to daven for them and their improvement. I titled the shiur, what is the source of Yosef's power? You know, when you think about Yosef wields an incredibly significant amount of power. He's not exaggerating when he says to his father, Vayisimeni la'av lefaro, ula'adon lechol beito, u'moshel b'chol eretz Mitzrayim. How much money does Yosef control? By the end of Parshat Vayigash, when it says, Vayinaleim balechem bashana ahi, there was no more kesef, so he acquired all the animals in Mitzrayim. Basusim, bachamorim, babakaru, vatzon. Yosef is a person who experienced power at a level that is certainly unrivaled in the Chumash, without any question. And in the annals of human history, how many people have had that kind of power? And all that is true, but I don't think it's the truest form of power. In fact, I think it's actually dwarfed by a much greater and more profound demonstration of power that Yosef demonstrates both at the beginning of Parshat Vayigash as well as at the end of Parshat Vayigash. Mishnah Perkei Avot says, "Ezeu Chacham Halomed Mikol Adam." So here I quote a rather limited repertoire of movies that I'm familiar with.
We'll fill you in here. Okay.
But those that I've seen, I've tried to learn from. So an altogether important movie, and one of the most important scenes in this movie. Schindler's List. And in Schindler's List is a very important scene between Schindler and the very evil commandant of the labor camp that they're in, a man by the name of Amon Goeth, who is a drunk and a murderer. And, you know, anything bad you could say about him would be true. And he's trying to explain to him that he shouldn't be so violent and so arbitrarily violent and so capricious. You know, he would have fun. There are these scenes in Schindler's List that he would wake up in the morning and take out his sniper rifle and just shoot innocent people. So Schindler sees this and he's trying to explain to him why he shouldn't do this. It's a very important line. So he says, that doesn't make you powerful. Any of your soldiers can do that. Any of your officers can do that. So what's true power? What would be a demonstration of what makes you truly powerful? Is the power to pardon. the power to forgive. And the commandant takes to it, and then
very briefly
he finds a little dirt on the mirror and then decides to shoot the young boy who he has cleaning his villa in this camp. But that idea is true. That idea has a deep resonance in Jewish thought. Is the koach of mechila. And without the power to not take everything which you can, which is at the table, which is there for the taking, but to allow the other side, the other person, to walk away with their dignity, that is the path, that is the road along which shalom is paved. Everybody says they're in favor of shalom. You know, people who are fighting, families are fighting, communities that are fighting. But when you talk to them about it, say, okay, so why isn't there shalom? But he did X, Y, and Z. She did X, Y, and Z. It's all true. So the greatest and most significant demonstration of power was when a person has a right and the ability to punish, and they don't. The right and the ability to assert themselves over other people, and they don't. So Yosef is extremely powerful in terms of all of the authority that he has in Egypt. But he's much more powerful, as demonstrated in the beginning of the parsha and the end, when he refrains. Now, last week we spoke about Yosef and his father. Now let's talk about Yosef and his brothers. The brothers already in Yosef's presence, without realizing that Yosef could understand, ki hamelitz benotam, because the translator was there, admitted their guilt. Ashemim anachnu alachinu. We're guilty for what we did to our brother. Ashirainu tsarat nafsho. We saw how he was suffering. Bitchanano elenu velo shamanu alkein ba'a alenu hatsara hazot. And this is why we're suffering now. Yosef had every right and the ability to do whatever he wanted to his brothers, except Binyamin. And yet repeatedly, this parsha that we read this past Shabbat, Parshat Vayechi, the brothers spend the rest of their life wondering and worrying, when is Yosef going to crack down on us? When Yaakov dies in this week's parsha, they think, okay, he's just been waiting for Yaakov to die. After all, we all certainly remember what Esav said, Yikrivu Yimei Evel Avi Va'argat Yaakov Achi. So now that Yaakov is dead, they're figuring that Yosef is saying, Yikrivu Yimei Evel Avi Va'argat Kol Achai. After all, they sold him. And Yosef, when they come to him and they say, they make up a story that Yaakov, you know, told them to say that after he would die, that Yosef should forgive them. Ana sana fesha achecha v'chatatam ki ra'a gimalucha v'ana sana fesha avdei Elohei avicha. The Torah says, v'yefk Yosef, that he cried. He said, how could I possibly do that to you? So Yosef begins the parsha by demonstrating something extremely important, which is the path towards shalom in a family, in a community. It is not a question of, do I have the right to do this? It's not a question of, am I able to do this? But is the ability to perform the ultimate act of strength and to withdraw, to say, I could, maybe another person would, but I'm not. Because shalom is more important. There's no way to get to shalom if everybody's going to assert all of their rights and do everything that they can do. You might get to emet, you'll never have shalom. And the koach ha-mechila, the power of forgiveness that Yosef demonstrates, is so much greater than all of the power that he wields in terms of the money that he controls and the assets that he controls. As Chazal taught us, Ezeu Gibor, what is true Gvura? Hakoveshet Yitzro, somebody who's able to overcome a deep desire. And the most natural thing to want to do is to have Nikama, to continue to be angry, And the pasuk which is cited in the Mishnah, which says "Ezu Gibor Hakovesh Yitzro," is "Tov Erech Hapayim Migibor Umoshel Beruchom Milochid Ir." It's a much greater form of power. What's remarkable about it is that Yosef doesn't only reserve it for his brothers. That's the beginning of the parsha. But, you know, the end of the parsha is in some ways more impressive, in some ways, because he extends it to the Egyptian people. Let me briefly review what it says in the Torah. It says, of course, that there was no food in Egypt except the food that Yosef had stored. So everybody was coming to Yosef. They first went to Paro, and Paro said, "What do you want from me? Go to Yosef." He knows. L'chol Yosef. He's the one who's in charge. V'yisimeni la'av l'faro l'adon l'chol beito v'moshel v'chol eretz Mitzrayim b'li hagzama. No exaggeration. Yosef was in control. So first they give the money, and then they give the animals. There's nothing left to give. They have no assets. So they come to Yosef and they say, "Look, we have no money, we have no animals, we're going to starve to death. Lama namut le'enecha? Why should we die? Kineotanu v'et admatenu, v'ayinu avadim lefaro, v'nichya v'lo namut, v'adama lo tesham." So they say quite simply, we have nothing left to offer, we have no assets, we have no money, we have no animals. The only thing that we could possibly do is sell our land and sell ourselves into slavery. And the Torah says that Yosef was not willing to go along. It says, "Vayiken Yosef et admat Mitzrayim lefaro." Yosef said, "Okay, the land I'll buy." But pointedly, the Torah makes it very clear, and I'm indebted to the Ramban for making this even clearer to me, that Yosef did not buy them as slaves, as they had suggested. The Torah says, "Vayikan Yosef et admat Mitzrayim lefaro," but they had offered, "Kinei otanu," that we will be avadim for Paro. And then the Torah says, Yosef bought all the land in Egypt. Rak admat ha-kohanim lo kana. He didn't buy the land of the Kohanim because the Kohanim had food already. Because there was already a law that was established in Egypt, ki chok la-kohanim me'ed Paro. As you have in many Middle Eastern societies, like in Saudi Arabia today, there's an agreement between the government and the clerics, the Wahhabi clerics. You have that in many societies. So in Egypt, there was an agreement between the government and the clerics. The clerics wouldn't mess with the government would fund the clerics. Ein chadash tachat hashamesh. You had the same arrangement in Mitzrayim long ago. So rak admata kohanim lo kana. So we're only talking about buying adama, we're not talking about buying people. And what's the response of the Egyptian people? Second to last pasuk of the parasha, Vayomru hecheitanu. You've given us life. The Ramban goes further and he explains this policy that Yosef came up with, that untatem chamishit lefaro, that okay, Paro owns the land, so if you're working the land that Paro owns, so you're tenants, or we would call it something like sharecroppers, so the established rate was that 80% of the produce would go to the landowners. And those people who are working the land, they would keep 20%. What does Yosef do? He inverts it. And he says, no, you should keep the 80%. Just give 20% tax. A lot of people would be happy with a 20% flat tax. You keep 80%. It's an incredible chesed that Yosef was doing. And not only did Yosef do that, but the Torah says, "Vayasem mota Yosef lechok." Al admat Mitzrayim lefaro. He established it as a law so that long after he was gone, these people would not be taken advantage of. Perhaps we could say that somebody who himself had been sold as an eved was not willing to do that to other people. They weren't his brothers. But he had chama. Could Yosef have bought them? Did he have the power to do that? Yeah. They suggested it. But his greatest power, Yosef, is manifest by not expressing all of his power. Not against his brothers, and not against the Egyptians. This is the truest form of power. It's what Schindler was trying to say. It's when you can, but you don't. This is the path towards shalom. This is why a family that was so divided against itself, after generations of sibling rivalries, Yosef is able to bring people together because he doesn't insist on strict justice. He doesn't insist on emet. You know, we have a tradition is that very often in life there's a conflict between shalom and emet. And it takes a very wise person and a very special person and a very rare person to go in the path of Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai. They disputed this point. And Beit Hillel taught us that shalom is more important than emet. It doesn't mean we go around lying. We try to avoid conflicts. You know, the Mishnah says, Al shosha dvarim olam kayam, al adin, al emet, al shalom. But when the chips are down and you're stuck, and you can only achieve one and not the other, so you have to choose. And there are really two kinds of people in this world. And the former is much more common than the latter. The first kind of person will assert their rights. As the expression goes, Anilo Friar. I'm not going to be taken advantage of because people perceive that as weakness. Nobody wants to be weak. But if people could reframe it and say that it's not a reflection of weakness, but it's strength. It's the ultimate strength. Ezu Gibora Kovesh Yitzro, shalom would be a lot more common. I have to say, I spend a very significant amount of time, too much time, dealing with siblings who are at war with each other. I don't know that it's the majority of cases, but it's many, many cases, and it's one of the saddest things about my job. Everybody has a story. And a lot of them are even true, I would say. Where they've been wronged. It was Yerusha.
It's mostly money.
Yeah. A lot of it is Yerusha. The other things too. It's his wife, to my wife, invitations, Yanta. Okay. A lot of it is even true. Now, sometimes the stories blur together. There are many of them. But what I have yet to hear anybody tell me when they say, why am I so angry at my sibling? Why do I treat them this way? Why am I vindictive? So it has not yet occurred. Hopefully it won't. It may yet occur. Say, Rabbi, I'll tell you. I'll tell you why there's tension between us. You see, when I was 17, he took me and he threw me into a pit and had me sold to a foreign country where I ended up spending many years in jail. Only by the grace of God did I emerge. It hasn't yet happened. Hasn't yet happened. And very often I sit there and think to myself, you know, we could continue to discuss all the wrongs that have been perpetrated, and let's assume that your side of the story is 100% true for now. But let's learn just the Sefer Bereishis together. Let's go back, let's learn Parshas Vayeshev. Then we'll learn Miketz, then we'll learn Vayigash, then we'll learn Vayichi. And say, what is the Torah trying to teach us? Why are we learning this story? Why does it matter? And one of the many reasons is because if we want peace, then we have to remember what Yosef did, which is to be able to say, there are things that happened in the past that are very painful for all of us, and it's probably within my rights to hate you. The brothers are fearing much worse, right? It's going to kill them. But that doesn't help anybody going forward. And this is not weakness. Yosef is the most powerful man in the world. There's incredible strength and character. And if people only appreciated that and tried to emulate it as best as possible, we'd all be better off. Our families, in our communities, you know. So, it's a message I leave you with. Please take it to the community. Shalom is really hard and it's very elusive, and it becomes for people tied up with, I can't be taken advantage of. But if we can reframe it to, it's the act of greater strength, then it's a greater demonstration of power, is to not take everything that's at the table, not everything that you deserve. It's one of the lessons of history also. The Treaty of Versailles, people know that it brought World War I to its conclusion. I was looking around for members of the history department. You know, we'll make do. Yeah. We'll think of Merida. Mm-hmm. The Treaty of Versailles was so punitive. Right? In terms of how it treated Germany after World War I. Right? The idea was that if we're really, really punitive, we're not going to have this problem again. So as we like to say in the field, that did not work out too well. So when the goal is to crush, to take everything, very often doesn't work. It certainly doesn't lead to shalom. So if you can work things out and everybody can sort of walk away feeling some measure of dignity, some equitable solution, what the Chachamim called pshara, it's better for everybody. And, you know, one might say, you know, where's truth in all of this? Where's justice in all of this? And to a certain extent, that's a fair critique. But as I said before, and this is, you know, the machlokes between Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai, is that in the final analysis, shalom is more valuable. We value truth deeply. Deeply. And, you know, it's not pleasant dealing with people who are dishonest and untruthful. It's actually highly unpleasant. But in the final analysis, there are some things that are, you know, even greater values. My admiration for Yosef is unending. And it's one of those things in life where the more experience you amass, the older you get, the more impressive it seems. Because you see more things and you see more people and you realize nobody behaves this way. And like I said, I've yet to personally encounter a case where somebody's grievance against their sibling was actually that, you know, they sold me into slavery. Or organized for me to be sold into slavery. Again, seen a lot of legitimate grievances, but that would top the list. And he was still able. So that's something for everybody to think about. I think the Torah is teaching us a very honest lesson about shalom, which is that it comes at a price, and it requires making really hard choices. But the value is really incalculable. The trouble with learning Sefer Breishit, and with this I'll conclude, is that we know the story, so we always just take it for granted. Well, yeah, of course, Yosef, you got the whole family back together. It's a great thing. It's not Muvan Meilav that he should have reacted that way. It's not self-evident. It's amazing if we actually take a step back and ask ourselves, do we know anybody who would behave that way? And not just that he didn't go and kill them, or, you know, to even worse, but as the Torah says, and this will conclude, Vayichalkel Yosef et aviv et achav lechem lefi atav, that Yosef, for the rest of their lives, he took care of his whole family. Lechem lefi atav. Binyamin, you have 10 children, we'll make sure you have enough meals. Dan, you have one child, enough meals. Reuven, you have 4 children. And he kept track of all of their families as only he could, you know, with his charts and Excel spreadsheets, and made sure the deliveries came on time. This is an incredible phenomenon. And Yosef supported them, took care of them. And these are the people who did what to him. So again, the greatest power and the greatest strength, the Koach HaMechilah.